welcome to another episode of That's So Cincinnati. We are here on a Tuesday this week, fresh off two big wins. The Bengals went to New Orleans and they brought home a win, and FC Cincinnati went to New York and they brought home not just a win, they brought home a playoff win, and they brought home their first playoff win. So who better to bring back as the guest this week? Jeff Birding, co-CEO of FC Cincinnati. We've had him before. He's a good storyteller, and this is the first time with his new title, so we'll see what we can get him to talk about. But there's some joy here this morning. Jeff is also, he holds, you know, dual hats. He likes to stay busy. I think we all know that. And he is the head of the Convention and Visitors Bureau Board. And yesterday we saw the unveiling of what a new convention center, like a big redo of it, could look like. And it was really a big unveiling. So
it was. And for people not following it as closely as you have been, Sherry, it seemed a little unexpected. Even though we knew that... Well, I mean, let's go back to like the recent attempts to get a new convention hotel, get rid of the Millennium, which is now a big open space with a big mural. If you haven't seen the mural next to the where the Millennium used to be, but it's kind of been this chicken and egg discussion a little bit. Do we need a convention hotel first? Especially now that the Millennium isn't there. So there's no, you know, facility that connects the convention center to a hotel large enough to carry, you know, to carry the load of a big convention. You know, we have what used to be a convention hotel is now a big parking lot, and we have a convention center that, despite attempts to keep it modernized over the years, is showing its age a little bit, not competing very well with cities that we compete with to bring in conventions. How does this all fit together, and what's the driving force right now?
I have to tell you, this was not on my radar as like the thing that was coming next. I knew the decking was coming, because that's a big project that we've been talking about.
And you're talking about the decking over Fort Washington Way?
Yes, I knew that was coming. Jeff has been talking about the need for an arena. That is so clear to anyone who's ever gone to a big concert. No offense to US Bank Arena. We know. We need one. And that's really been on the radar. Is that going to be the next big thing? We've even written stories about what parcels they could be in the city. And we need this convention hotel. So all along, I've had in my head, we're probably going to hear about this convention hotel. 3CDC, which does all the downtown and over the Rhine development, was put in charge of like having this all come together. And I knew they were working on something, but I was really like, the next time we hear from them, they're going to say, this is the hotel. We put out an RFP. This is what came back. And we have a hotel that's going to fit right in there. And maybe this is what the convention center will look like. But that is not what happened yesterday. They came right into, and I even knew the carryover budget for city council is $85 million. There's a lot of things in it. And there's not a lot of controversial things in it. So we haven't been covering it minutia to minutia. I knew there was some money in there for it. And I did not put together what this was going to look like. And so it was a big unveiling yesterday of, I thought, everyone's kind of weighing in on social, but I thought it was really cool.
Well, you're right. If you look at the improvements we need to make here from a tourism standpoint, from a, you know, not just tourism in terms of conventions, but just bringing people to town for concerts. You know, you mentioned the arena, which is in such need of a makeover that you didn't even call it by its right name. It's Heritage Bank Center now. Yes, we don't want people at Heritage Bank to get upset.
I've been here so long. I call everything by its old name.
Well, I still want to call it the Coliseum.
Okay,
right, the Cincinnati Coliseum before it had corporate sponsorship. You know, the list is long. So we can talk to Jeff about, you know, what he sees maybe the priorities are in terms of where the investment needs to be made. But I think probably the big change is, you know, why we're seeing activity on it. And you touched on this, is that the decision was made to put 3CDC in charge of the development of the, you know, what they're going to call the convention district. Their plans go beyond the facility and where a new hotel might be to really creating kind of the next entertainment, whether that be, you know, restaurants, shopping, mixing in some you know, mixed use, some residential expansion too. It is probably one of the more dead areas of town when you know, that block, you know, from 4th up to 5th on the kind of the west side of downtown where the Duke Center is, it gets dead pretty quickly. And I think there's a big opportunity there. And, you know, 3CDC has shown over the years that they are effective when it comes to getting investment, getting plans together. But on the investment side, I think we don't yet understand where that money's going to come from, do we?
We do not. I don't know. Someone's just going to open a checkbook. I think the federal government, obviously people are going to be relying on that a lot. These infrastructure dollars, I understand that. But, you know, the federal government's not going to swoop in here and do all of these projects. So that is an interesting thing. And honestly, the timeline for the convention center is really, after getting past the pictures, is really what I was stuck on. Because they're like, yeah, by next fall. That's like tomorrow in terms of building.
Yeah,
so
right.
I was like, and we don't really know where the money is going to come from. There is a lot of things going on that side of town. And the federal government is also, they're hoping for money. Central Parkway, kind of get that done, connect. That's going to connect the FC Cincinnati Stadium with the Bengals Stadium, which is looked to be redone, right? That's coming up next year. And then north of of FC Cincinnati is, you know, Jeff is not on as much on the soccer side as he used to be, because he's turning his attention to developing north of the stadium. That land is owned by the team, and it is going to be a development similar to what you see in this country around other stadiums. So that is a lot of things coming down the pike, I think. I'm going to throw out one more number at you. Okay.
I'm ready.
So this is not a number that we've written about, but Hamilton County Auditor Dusty Rhodes sent out a note this morning. I don't know what made him look at this, but I guess he is the auditor, and that's what they do. They look at money. He wrote to several reporters in town this morning that there is a significant decline in Hamilton County sales tax revenue this month, reflecting August sales. The general fund proceeds are down 18% versus the same month last year, and the stadium fund is down 19.97% versus August 2021. Those are the kind of numbers when I look at locally. It's what we've been hearing about nationally, about what's happening with the economy. But that's our money. That's our money that pays for all the things that happen here. And that's the kind of money that they're going to need to dip into for these projects, even if it's not for the whole project and it's for some of them.
Well, Dusty Rhodes is known to call it as he sees it.
I mean, if you're on Twitter, you know this.
Oh, yeah. I've been on the receiving end of some Dusty rants for sure. But I don't think he's being alarmist here. I think that this is going to be the challenge.
We put no opinions in this.
Yeah.
This is straight facts.
Yep.
There's a spreadsheet attached to it with some numbers. And he didn't say, this is good, this is bad, this is alarming. He just was like, I noticed this morning.
Well, we shall see.
Cheer your topics. Cheer your topics.
We shall see. Well, let's talk to Jeff, and we'll get into this a little bit, but I'm ready to talk about soccer too.
Special guest time here on That's So Cincinnati on much lighter topics and with some good news. We have Jeff Birding, the co-CEO of FC Cincinnati. Welcome back. to the podcast, but your first time with co-host Burl.
Hi, Sherry and Burl. It's great to be with you.
We always love to have you.
Is Jeff one of the most prolific guests? Is he like, you know, what Steve Martin is to Saturday Night Live? Is Jeff one of the like early and often guests on the podcast?
He is. This is either his third time or his fourth time.
We're going to have to get
you. Well, I'd like to say that I'm that so sensey.
Actually, that's true. You grew up on the West Side. Yes.
We're going to have to get you a special jacket or something.
I would wear it proudly.
Okay.
But I'm going to guess we're doing this on the phone today, but as long as we like to talk about what we're wearing now, apparently, I'm going to guess that you are clad head to toe in blue and orange. Am I right?
Yes, you are. It is the brand, right?
It is.
I try to be the brand.
Do you look back and say that you're glad that those are the colors you chose?
I've not regretted the colors for a second.
I
love the colors. I think our fans love the colors.
It looks good when you're in the TQL Stadium and it's full of screaming fans.
And, you know, we planned it that way. We looked at all the different sports teams that were blue and orange, and it looked great on TV, and people bought a lot of merchandise. So, I've made a lot of good decisions and plenty of not so good ones, and I think the blue and orange colors were hit the mark in a really positive way.
Well, first we should congratulate you and the team. Some historic firsts occurred. First playoff goal, first playoff win since, you know, becoming part of the MLS. Can you talk a little bit about how that feels?
Well, obviously we're really excited. We're proud as can be and happy for our fans who were patiently standing by us through a couple of pretty miserable seasons as we moved from a winning USL team, a winning minor league team, made the playoffs every year. And obviously, you know, we entered Major League Soccer too quickly and didn't know what we were doing and didn't run it the right way. But we've rebooted with Chris Albright and Pat Noonan, and we're so excited to have a winning MLS team that's in the playoffs, winning and representing Cincinnati and giving our fans, you know, real joy, real excitement. It's enormously fulfilling.
So I was going to ask if the first two seasons you chalk off to, you know, growing pains, making the jump, but did I hear you say you might have jumped too quickly? Is that what hindsight is telling you?
Well, if you look at Nashville, which was awarded at the same time as Cincinnati, actually 4 months ahead of us, they had two full years to prepare for their introduction of playing games in MLS. Charlotte started this year. I think they had three. St. Louis will start next year. They had three. And we had about 8 months. And, you know, we didn't have enough time to know what we didn't know and get the right people in place to, you know, over time, taking their time to figure out how we wanted to enter the league, how we wanted to play, the coach, the style, the roster. It was just a rush job, and obviously a lot, and you know, no different than maybe sometimes when reporters are rushing to get things and there's a little, you know, error and spelling error or whatnot. I mean,
that never happens.
Sometimes when you do things too quickly, you screw up. And there's no question, you know, the results speak for themselves. We screwed up the introduction of the league. The team was poor. We were not a winning team. There was a lot of disappointment, frustration. I mean, I describe those years as miserable.
Well,
they were.
I mean there's two schools of thought. I mean,
I suffered the misery of the losing team because that's not what we aspired to do when we created FC Cincinnati. We aspired to be a winning team, not a losing team.
So, I mean, the two schools of thought, there's no time like the present. Jump into the fire, we'll figure it out, or take your time and have a plan in place. If you were to do it again,
we weren't given an option. That's the thing. We weren't given an option. Major League Soccer said, build your stadium downtown and you're going to play next year. And, you know, we wanted to be Cincinnati's third major league franchise. So we said, okay, we'll do our best.
I have to say, I've known you for a long time back dating to your council member days. You are a kind of jump all in person anyway, though. So I feel like it suited your personality.
I'm not going to back down from a challenge in that regard, but this is probably where there's a little bit of hindsight, you know, and Carl has talked about this publicly as well. You know, we just, maybe there should have been pushback or further discussion. And we just said, well, this is what the requirement is, and let's do it. Without probably sufficient appreciation for how hard it was going to be.
And you're talking for our listeners about Carl Lindner, the owner of the team.
We just didn't have the right people in place to meet the challenge, because it takes time to understand this league. So we would have set ourselves up for more success if the people who were running the soccer side were more familiar with the league, because they would have had some learnings in another club. Which is what happened with Chris Albright and with Pat Noonan, right? They had a ton of experience, and they brought all of that experience, and we are the beneficiaries, and the results speak for themselves. But that's not how we entered the league. We had people who were also new to the league, and yeah, at the end of the day, the results also speak for themselves there. So, that's why we made the change, and we were very intentional that we hired Chris, and with Chris hiring the coaching staff, we wanted people who were highly experienced, many, many years of experience, winning experience. They knew what winning required in this league, and we were very intentional, which led us to hire Chris Albright and Pat Noonan and the coaching staff.
So walk us through that a little bit. It was more than just a change in coach. You also restructured the front office a little bit. Out of the box, you were over both, you know, the business side of the operation and soccer operation, and you set up a little differently. Can you walk us through that?
There's a narrative out there, and so at the end of the day, everyone has a boss. My boss is Carl Lindner. Chris Albright reports to me. So in that respect, Gerard reported to me. The point I would say is I was very in the weeds on the business side. And so Gerard was more on an island running the soccer side. What we were intentional about this year is, as co-CEO, I'm not in the weeds. I'm of a higher macro strategic enterprise level regarding overcoming the growth, strategic growth of the franchise, both on the sporting side as well as on the business side. The stadium is built. So yeah, to a certain extent, I'm also, how are we using the stadium? How are we doing our mixed use development? But I'm not in the weeds. And by not being in the weeds in any of the organization anymore on the business side, it gives me a little bit more time to be connected with Chris and give Chris the support he needs and the resources that he needs to be successful. So it's not as if I was really involved on the soccer side previously with Gerard, and I'm not at all anymore, and therefore we're successful. It's just I have more time now and bandwidth as co-CEO, working alongside Carl, working alongside Chris, working alongside our business folks to just make sure that there's the resources we need, solving problems, removing challenges, and the like, and making sure that there's alignment to our values and our strategic goals, that the organization is moving in the right direction collectively, business and soccer. And Chris and I are working very well. We have great communication. We're aligned on the plan, and he does a great job managing the day-to-day activities of everything that's going on in soccer, scouting the players, the analytical analysis, the budget management, the support for the coaching staff, etc. Chris has come in and he's done a great job. And my job is to make sure he has the resources that he needs, that the communication is there, that the alignment stays there. And it's worked, obviously, well, as evidenced by results.
So as this team heads to the semifinals, people are, we're in the playoffs and they're so excited. But this is not something that was expected this year. But people were just happy at the beginning. Fans were just happy at the beginning of the year to be winning games. At what point did it go from we're not going to be the bottom, and that being some sort of metric, to we're going to the playoffs?
Well, It's interesting. It's a good question, Sherry. Our goal, if you were to ask Carl Lindner before the season started, and Meg Whitman, and I, you know, have some internal paper to back this up, the goal was to make the playoffs. And people may have thought, oh, geez. But even Chris had belief that we were going to improve the roster. We have a great coach, a great coaching staff. We're going to develop the players. If you look at Brenner, Brandon Vasquez, and Lucho Acosta, they were all on the team last year. And that this is a league where you can, it's a long season. You're going to add players as you go, and you can be competitive. And if at a certain point you can go from being competitive to getting results, and you can go from getting some results to get more regular results, and then you find yourself in a position to play meaningful matches at the end of the year and then make the playoffs. And so I would say the goal was to make the playoffs. The belief was to make the playoffs. But at the end of the day, you have to have a team led by a staff that performs and goes and fights and gets it each match. I would say that there was growing confidence as the season went, that the foundational pieces were there, and then we added Obina, Miazga, and Sergio Santos, which gave us, you know, much better defense with Matt Miazga and Nuoto Obina, and then a little bit more firepower off the bench with Sergio Santos. And all of a sudden, we lost, I think, two times from June 1 till the end of the year. I think we lost two matches. I know it's two matches. Maybe it was June the 5th. But from like some point in June on, we only lost two times. I know there were a lot of ties in there. I acknowledge that. But to go from a team that was losing most of the matches to now you're no longer losing. I mean, for a pretty long stretch, you only lose two games. And you're one of the, at the end of the year, we were the fourth best scoring team in the league, which, you know, you go to games, you want to see the team score goals. That's the smoke. That's the Bailey. That's the excitement, scoring goals. It's hard. We scored the fourth most goals of any team in the league. So you can score goals in the defense with the additions of Matt Miazga and Obina. We were just much better. And like, okay. And we were the only team in the Eastern Conference that didn't lose to Philadelphia. We tied them in Philly and we beat them in Cincinnati. Now, they're the best team. There's no question that they belong as the favorite top seed, because I think over the last 4 years, Philadelphia has the most points. So this is a team that's been great every year for a period of many years. But at the end of the day, we have confidence in our group, and you know, we match up with them well, at least as indicated by the two times we played them this year. And, you know, and we're excited to see if we can go there and win and maybe be in the Eastern Conference final.
Do you still give pep talks to the team, or you leave that to complete soccer side?
So to be fair, I gave some pep talks before we played Pittsburgh in the USL, because I have a special passion about beating Pittsburgh as a result of the rivalry between the Bengals and the Steelers.
It gets ingrained. It does.
And I am proud to say, and I have alumni Bengals players who I am friends with, who also are proud to note that we never lost to Pittsburgh. Now, they're not in the MLS, but in the USL, we never lost to Pittsburgh. Having said that, as we made the transition into Major League Soccer, I gave a very excited, passionate speech after the first game, because I was excited. The first home game against Portland at Nippert. And I don't think I've given a pep talk since. I try to be very supportive in my relationship with the players. I spend a little bit of time. I go to the games. I go in the locker room. I shake hands. I, you know, thank them for fighting, for being warriors, for battling, congratulating on results or goals or what have you. But at the end of the day, that's Pat's job, Chris's job, and the people who work every single day out of Milford.
Well, this also preserves your record as far as pep talks and wins. If you stop right now, I think you're batting 1,000, right?
You know, that's a great way to look at it.
There
you
go.
Thank you, girl.
So can you describe the biggest, whether it's a cultural change or an approach to the game, that Noonan brings that has been the differentiator?
Well, when you walk into the Bengals training area at Paul Brown Stadium, there's a picture on the wall of Paul Brown. And next to that, it's in the weight room, or no, it used to be in the weight room. I guess now maybe that's the cafeteria. But there's a picture of Paul Brown, and it says, "Winning makes believers of us all." And the inverse of that is also true. And I think with it all starts with the head coach. When the head coach, when the players believe, feel that the coach believes in them, it's easier for them to believe in the coach. And when the coach has experience winning, and the coach has high standards, and the coach is coaching you up to standards that he knows results in winning, it's easier to believe in the coach. And then you start to get results. And so then that belief is further solidified. And so the coach is believing in the players who are getting results. The players are believing in the coach who's leading the results. And success brings more success. But it all starts with belief. And I think from the first day Pat showed up as the head coach and started reaching out to the players, and we went into preseason, and even after the first game, there's been that belief in Pat Noonan and the coaching staff, and the coaching staff led by Pat.
Heading into Thursday's game, you mentioned Philadelphia. You mentioned you perform well against them. We're at the point now in the season, and you mentioned earlier the ties. I think 13 ties. But for the soccer novices like me who are really just starting to process all of this, ties are over. The game is going to be decided one way or the other from this point forward in the playoffs. Can you describe? Yes. Well, and you've got extra time. So can you walk us through what overtime looks like, or what extra time looks like leading up to the penalty kicks?
Sure. So, of course, there's still the 45-minute first half, halftime, 45 minutes. Then they add the extra minutes, which almost caused me sickness with 12 minutes against Red Bull. But at the end of the added time, if it's still tied, there will be two 15-minute effectively quarters, but two 15-minute periods with a small break in between. If a goal, it's not sudden death like the NFL. So if a goal is scored in, say, the first 15 minutes, you still play the second 15 minutes. If the game is still tied at the conclusion of the two 15-minute periods, then it goes to penalty kicks. Flip of the coin, one team goes first, one team goes second. At the end of five kicks, if there's a winner who's made more of the five, then you have a winner. If it's still tied, then it becomes effectively sudden death, where each team gets one additional kick. And at the conclusion of each round of kicks, if there's a team ahead, then that is the team that is the winner, who advances to the next round of the playoffs.
I'm nervous just listening to that description.
That's a lot.
Just picturing that. Now, can in those 15-minute periods in overtime or extra time, can the refs add time to those if they feel that play was stopped too long, or is it just a hard clock?
Yes. No. No. The referee always has time to add. So if you have a player that's laying on the field injured for 2 or 3 minutes, they're going to add 2 or 3 minutes.
Gotcha. And how do you feel, because obviously in the regular season, you're not in that type of a situation. Is that something the team practices now? Is that, do you, if you look at the roster, do you feel good with the, ability of FC players to perform in a penalty kick situation?
I would offer that at this point, Pat and the coaching staff is preparing for every scenario that we may face in a playoff match, including the extra time and the penalty kicks. I mean, last night there was a game, Dallas in Minnesota. Minnesota had the second of their five kicks blocked by the goalkeeper. Dallas made all five of their kicks, and at the conclusion of the fifth kick celebrated because they had advanced. There was a game earlier Austin played Real Salt Lake, also in the West, also went to PKs. So it's certainly very possible.
And then home field is awarded to the higher seed. Looking out ahead, what is, if you've kind of forecast the matchups, when might we see the first playoff game at TQL Stadium?
What he means is when we win this match, then what?
The answer is the first home game at TQL, playoff game at TQL Stadium would be next year, because we are the fifth seed and the higher seeds all advanced around us.
All advanced, okay.
So FC Cincinnati has played its final home game, unfortunately, at TQL Stadium this year. We needed to have been, you know, a couple of those ties needed to be wins for us to have had an opportunity to have a home game. So that is unfortunate.
Or an upset in the early rounds where...
Correct. Yeah, that is the point. Yeah.
Right, yep.
If any of the lower-seeded teams had upset the higher-seeded teams, then we would have had a chance to host... If we had advanced past, if we have the good fortune to advance past Philly, but that is no longer an option.
All right, next year, TQL is built for the playoffs. I've seen it in there. I do want to take a minute. You're very busy. This was a hard week to get yourself. I do want to turn. I want to pivot a little bit because you actually have two jobs. The other one's just
I wouldn't call the other one a job, a position maybe.
Okay, so you are the chairman of the Visitor and Conventions Bureau board, but this is a board that really is very important in the city. It doesn't get as much attention as it should, except when the big things come out. And so we heard some news yesterday about the convention center. Getting a redo with some, it was actually yesterday seemed very dramatic, like dramatic unveilings of this beautiful convention center. And I was wondering, how long has that been in the works?
Well, probably this entire year, calendar year.
And what?
I mean, if you think about it, the city and the county jointly passed a resolution to appoint 3CDC as the development manager. I think that was, you know, less than halfway into the year, and 3CDC's been actively working behind the scenes on a plan. I think that this has been a priority. If you remember, at the annual meeting of the Convention and Visitors Bureau, I called on the city, the community. The Convention and Visitors Bureau sells Cincinnati to visitors and groups to bring their conventions to Cincinnati. And as the board chair, I said, we need better assets to sell. We don't have a convention hotel. A primary convention hotel. We have an old, outdated, I'll just leave it there, old and outdated Duke Energy Center. We have an old, you know, decrepit arena. And as a community, we have to decide, are these priorities? Because we can only sell the assets that the city leaders, whether that be in public, civic, business, provide. And right now, we don't have great assets to sell. And this community has to decide whether we're satisfied with the condition of those assets. And I was hoping that the answer would be no, we're not satisfied, and it's time that we're going to do something about it. Unfortunately, the business community felt strongly it's time to do something about these assets. The city and the county elected officials and other civic leaders thought it was time. We put 3CDC in charge of the convention district, modernizing the convention center and the convention hotel. And there's been a lot of work behind the scenes just to make sure that people are, you know, that it's a viable plan, that it meets the needs of the community. There was some commitments that are going to be necessary from different groups. And so you have to get in front of some of those groups to at least get some initial feedback. Are we on the right track or not? And then, you know, ultimately that culminated in the presentation yesterday.
When you say commitment by different groups, are we talking about the money? Because the $200 million price tag. This is what they cost. I know this. We've talked about this. I've written about this before. I'm not like, oh, this is an exorbitant cost for a convention center, but it is still $200 million. Where is that money going to come from?
Well, I think I don't want to get out in front of Steve Leeper and the city and the county, but there's thoughts on a way to finance. And I'll just speak for the Convention and Visitors Bureau. You know, we want to sell the city with the benefit of a more modern Duke Energy Center and a hotel. And so we, the Convention Visitors Bureau, Visit Cincinnati, Visit Cincy, are willing to contribute towards that solution. What ultimately comes to pass is still to be determined, but we have signaled that we will be a part of the financial solution.
So I saw the pictures. And who is your target? If you could have any kind of conventions start coming here that we don't have now, who is this convention center that we were looking at yesterday targeted at to come here?
Well, the Convention and Visitors Bureau and some independent work compares us against our peer group and how many events they have, how many hotel nights, the tax dollars that are brought in from those groups, and be able to level set ourselves against our peer group. We're not comparing ourselves to Las Vegas. We're not comparing ourselves to Miami. We're comparing ourselves to largely similar Midwest size cities, or a little bit south. So the types of groups, I think it's less about the types of groups than it is the number of groups and the number of nights they're staying in our hotels, because when they're staying in our hotels, they're also going to our restaurants, they're going to our bars, maybe they're spending some dollars here from a retail perspective, maybe they're going to the casino, who knows. But at the end of the day, if they're coming here in the summer, maybe they're going to a Reds game. So these are all things that help us grow the economic pie in the region. The dollars involved can be in the, $1 billion. I mean, this is an enormous industry. And I think what the outside experts have concluded is we're not getting our fair share, and we are losing some of these groups to other cities that we wouldn't look at and say those are superior cities. That, of course, I mean, again, if a group wasn't coming to Cincinnati and was going to Vegas, you sort of go, they're going to Vegas. But if they're going to Lexington or Louisville or Indianapolis or Columbus or Cleveland or Pittsburgh, Raleigh, those are groups that we should be able to get here in Cincinnati, and that would run the gamut of what kinds of groups, Sherry. But we need to give ourselves the opportunity to go get those groups with their visitors and the dollars that the visitors are going to spend to support. And why this is important to listeners is, let's be honest, most of us, we go to work and we go home to our families, but we might come downtown on the weekends. But if you don't have visitors here during the week, guess what? Those restaurants and bars and other types of amenities, they might not be open on the weekend because they close, because they can't stay open with no business during the week. And so these visitors are very important to the amenities that we enjoy on weekends or an occasional weeknight out. Very important to keep the local economy strong for all of us who call this home.
I do know that you have to go, but before we let you go, I'm going to ask one more question. I'm going to let Burl ask the final question. Okay.
That's a lot of pressure, but I got a good one.
All right. Me too. All right. I'll try
a quick answer.
Okay. In order, rank how these projects need to get done. A convention hotel, the convention center redo, an arena, the decking over Fort Washington Way, and the redo of Paul Brown Stadium. I know that last one puts a little bit of pressure in there, but that is a big project that we're looking at.
How about I'll say it chronologically?
Okay.
The hotel, convention hotel, and the modernization of the Duke Energy Center go in tandem. One won't happen without the other.
Okay.
So I would offer that they will be first. I'd then like to think that we will begin to have the conversation about the arena. And is there a site, and is there a plan that the city and the county and civic leaders and the business community are all on board with a more modern arena? And just to, again, clarify for listeners, we're not talking that it immediately then an NBA or an NHL team. The Sprint Center in Kansas City is a modern arena. They have an NFL team, a Major League Baseball team, an MLS team. It's a similar size Midwest city, but they have an arena that draws college basketball games. It draws an occasional maybe NBA game. It draws, you know, Bruce Springsteen and all the best concerts. And they put a car show and the boat show and the home and garden show and all those shows that might otherwise be at your convention center, they have them at the arena because those tend to be more local, regional events. And you don't take up your convention center to have shows that don't fill hotel rooms and don't bring visitors. So I would think that would be third. I think that the decking over Fort Washington Way, there's going to be a process with the federal government, and obviously that's a priority, and Central Parkway, redoing Central Parkway, there's infrastructure funding available for those, but there is a process with regard to the feds and local matching that I know people are doing their diligent work to line up, and my guess is that's on probably some sort of parallel track with the arena. And I would just say respectfully, the Paul Brown Stadium one is the county and the Bengals, and I'm not 100% sure what that timeline is. My sense is that that'll take care of itself, and I'm more focused on those other things that I just spoke to.
Okay, Burl, we got to let him go.
All right, so we're going to go right back to soccer now. It has been a, I would say, gratifying season for fans, but probably no more gratifying than it is for you, who you mentioned, you know, at the beginning, the, you know, suffering through the growing pains, the losses. What would you say, you know, besides having more time and being able to enter the league on your own timetable, what one thing do you look back on and say, you know what, I would have done this differently?
Well, look, it's not as if we didn't try to hire people who had MLS experience. They're just, with the quick turn, I think there was a belief that we were not going to be successful, and there just weren't a lot of great candidates. I'm answering that. Just so you know, it wasn't as if we were intentional to hire European soccer leadership. That was just our best candidates is where it came down. And I did say at the time, you know what, if we screw up the soccer side, we'll fire people and start over. You screw up the stadium and you set your franchise back decades. And we heard that from other MLS teams who frankly admitted to us privately they screwed up their stadium and they were in a really bad place, and they were going to be in a very bad place in this league for a long time. So I'll offer, we made the right decision where, again, I put everything I had into getting the stadium right. And yeah, the counterbalance is we didn't have the soccer team set up for the soccer side set up for success. I mean, really the time was the biggest thing. I mean, look, you could say, Jeff, you hired the wrong people, and I think that speaks for itself. The results were not good, so we hired the wrong people. But as I said, and then we replaced those people with Chris and Pat and their coaching staff, and clearly they're the right people. But guess what? One of the soccer folks said to me on the plane coming home, you know, Jeff, you had this thing completely set up for us to be successful. You have the stadium, you have the training facility, you have the fan base, you have some really good players on the roster. You just needed a group who knew what the hell they were doing with respect to Major League Soccer, this league. And everything was set up for us. And, you know, that was with an adult beverage in a really fun moment to say, hey, you know, it was what you said. You got the key things right. You had to get right. And then it was set up for success once you got the right people in here. And, you know, we set up to be a winning team. We won in the USL, and yeah, we didn't think it was going to take us 3 years.
Well, I think you spoiled everybody while you were in the USL because you had
ourselves too.
yeah. No, and you mentioned the assets of the stadium, but you also touched on the fans and having been to a couple of games, matches, I'm so proud when I see this community coming out to support any cause, you know, whether it's a sport team or anything, and for some reason, they did not appear to be worse for the wear. In fact, it might have made him a little hungry and maybe appreciate this even more. So that's my take on it.
I would agree about appreciating it more. We didn't aspire at all, and we suffered through the misery with our fans. But at the end of the day, comparing us to other MLS teams, we have passionate support here. We have relevance in this market. FC Cincinnati is important to a lot of people here, and we are blessed by that. The connection that we've done with the community and in the West End, I'm impressed by that. I get great feelings when people in the West End say, you've done more than I ever thought you were going to do. Or West End leaders say, hey, you've exceeded our expectations. Because Carl and I try to be genuine people who care about our city. And of course we were going to meet our expectations and then some. And that was always the intention. But back to setting us up for success, that commitment and connectivity into the community on a lot of different levels, yeah, then once the team starts winning, you know, that excitement takes hold because there's already a foundation there to help it rise. And I'm thrilled, you know, we got here. And to get my first playoff win, and I, you know, it's great to go to a playoff game and come home on a plane as a winner. And to have that happen the first time was awesome.
Thank you so much for joining us today. I learned a lot. And good luck. So that kind of turned into just like an actual interview there at the end.
That's You're always like, a reporter at heart, Sherry. That's good.
We were on a time deadline. I have about, I don't know, 50 more questions. But that's some good starting points. We learned a little bit more than we had known prior to that discussion.
And Jeff sounded in a good mood. I mean, he's right. You know, winning changes everything, right? Look at the Bengals.
Yes, this is very true.
And on the flip side of that coin, we don't even want to talk about this past Reds season. I just, you know, as a big Reds fan, those are the rough seasons, and you know, it's good to have some winning going on, right?
If you're
a Cincinnati sports fan.
We've had some good guests on, and they promise us there's rebuilding.
So, Sherry, we talked about Blink last week. Now Blink is behind us, and we both blinked.
We
right?
did.
And you know, we have done a little reporting on the reaction to Blink this year, and it was a little bit of a mixed bag compared to past years where there was nothing but, you know, rave reviews. There was some, you know, some Reddit threads and some people on social media who expressed some displeasure with how spread out things were, that there didn't seem to be some, you know, as many concentrated eye-popping wow areas. They had some technical difficulties. You know, I think we have to remember that, like many events and many large-scale operations, there's going to be ups and downs and growing pains. And so we'll probably report a little bit more about that. But I have a very pressing question about your Blink experience. And that is, you experienced Blink by golf cart.
I did.
That sounds like really extravagant, but really it wasn't. I mean, you had a good reason for that, right?
I did. I've mentioned this a lot of people know, I have a big birthday coming up, 50. And apparently when you turn 50, you just have unknown ailments. And I am experiencing some pretty bad leg pain out of the clear blue nothingness. I'm like, is this really happening?
But
I was not going to miss Blink.
But you are Sherry, and you weren't going to miss Blink.
So I went into problem-solving mode.
And so tell me a little about this. Like, is it a thing? Do they, like, how did you even procure a golf cart? And, like, do you know, could others do that? Do they have, like, you
so
know?
You can go, it's guest carts, and I have taken them, like, around downtown in the evening. They're out when the bars are, you know, kind of hopping and everything, and they are a convenient way to get from over to the Rhine to the banks, and they stay in, like, the downtown area because they are golf carts. They're street legal, and they run they have advertising on them, and they run solely on tips, and I know that they're out there, and I happened to meet the owner of them at the Super Bowl because he brought a bunch out there, which they were super handy in LA with all of the traffic that was going on there. And I was like, could I do something? Can you rent them? And sure enough, honestly, I just pulled up their website and bam, right there, it's like, do you want to rent a golf cart? And I was like,
People need to know this.
I just filled out like a normal form, like a normal person. I did end up talking to him since I had met him before and he recognized my name, like on the, you know, the automated form and everything. But I cannot say enough good things about how that was a really good experience. And that I do wish that, you know, I paid money for this and it was a good way to do it if you couldn't really get around. And I realize that's not, everybody wasn't able to do that. But our driver, Joe, he knows this city. I learned things about, you know, we went over to Northern Kentucky. He knew every nook and cranny, every alleyway, every little shortcut behind a building. And he knew about all the things. And he knew, he had just been to Blink just the evening before we went. And I took my family. This was not like a ride on the golf cart, you know, party cart.
This wasn't the pedal cart bar experience.
No,
this was the family experience.
I did see that. I mean, I did see that during Blink,
I'm glad
though.
We're getting into this because, you know, I like to think I'm pretty informed. It comes with the job, right? And I just stumbled across that. In fact, it was when The Who was at TQL Stadium. And because I'm really cheap, and I already, you know, pay for monthly parking, I decided to park down here at Elm Street and walk up to the concert.
Editors, they're just like you, because
right,
that's what I do.
And so it is a little bit of a hike from 3rd and Elm up to, you know, where the stadium is. And we weren't even a block. And this golf cart just stops and was like, would you like a ride? And you know me, like, what's the catch? How much is this going to cost? Like, is this legit? But it was totally legit. It was a fantastic experience. It was a big golf cart, so we made friends with the people who were on the cart with us. The driver was nice. This is a nice little, like, kind of off the radar a little bit amenity. If, you know, you want to do something downtown, if you're coming to a big event, know that this option is out there. I think that's it's actually a cool thing.
You can go to their website and just, you know, order a ride up, and then they do, you know, survive on the drivers. They tip them.
Tip your drivers.
That is a big thing.
Tip your drivers.
But it was a really good experience, and, you know, I'm very happy. I think in other years I might have been talking about really doing Blink with my friends and my husband, but I just loaded up my son and his best friend, and we had, like, a very family-friendly Blink. It was a good night.
Well, we had a good time too.
Do you have a favorite?
Yeah, my favorite was the mural, and I should have done a little more homework, but it's basically of this goddess. It's on Central Park or Liberty. I'm sorry, Liberty and 15th, I think. A huge, wide space. So picture, if you will, like a goddess with a spear, you know, and the olive branch wreath kind of thing and the flowing white robes. It's stunning just to look at it. It's a brand new mural that just barely got completed in time for Blink. In fact, I was watching it the week of Blink thinking, how are they going to get this done? But they got it done. And the integrated light display brought this goddess to life. And I just stood there and couldn't stop looking at it. It was just fantastic.
And that was one. That one was beautiful and not, you know, a lot of people, us included, the top three things, the top five things, you know, that we need to see. And those things were as promised for sure, that some of those murals. My favorite thing was up on McMicken. You know, we were going to just cut across. Everyone was pretty tired.
You were tired riding in the golf cart?
Well, we had
Crimea River.
It was a hop on, hop off.
Oh, okay.
So I was
feeling
I was feeling a little bit better. And he coordinated, like, I'm dropping you off at this beginning of this, and then if you walk and do see these three, I'll pick you up at the other side. You could not have seen this really in any meaningful way. You have to stand there and look at the installations. But we were going to just kind of cut across McMicken. We'd done a lot, and there were just some beautiful murals up there. And my favorite thing was just kind of off to the side of a building was a spirograph. Projector. That was one of my favorite toys when I was little. I loved doing that and making art with it. And it was just kind of projected up on the wall. And so I'm calling it the spirograph. That's probably not its official name.
I had a spirograph. I'm dating myself now.
I know. And my child and, which obviously is my fault, and his friend did not know what I was speaking about.
Right.
It was one of those moments.
I'm glad you got to see Blink.
I did.
Even though you were nursing your leg.
I still am here today.
I know. Well, you look fantastic. You don't look like you're in pain. The meds must be good. But that's the dedication Sherry Coolidge has, everyone.
I love doing the podcast, you guys. Please keep listening. Go back and listen to some of our past episodes because, you know, they just live on all podcast platforms. And we've had a string of really good guests. Please go back to the Jeff Ruby and Brittany Ruby one. That was just such a fun conversation. And we're going to bring you some good guests coming up because now that Burl is my co-host, we're better planners. No offense, Jason. Thanks, guys.